This is Thrace Relations, a podcast about Spartacus, the television series on Starz Channel. Hello, I'm Em.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Paul.
Welcome back to Thrace Relations. We're here today to talk about the episode 7, Great and Unfortunate Things, from Blood and Sand, Season 1. What were your feelings on this episode?
Another horrible episode in a long line of horrible episodes. This show stinks.
Crap.
This is the last podcast I'll be doing. No, it's joking. This is keeping up with the quality that's been exhibited from episode 1. I mean, it's great. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. And it's another, I mean, it seems like every episode has its big moments, you know, like some TV shows, it'll have like a couple episodes where it's like, okay, you know, something big's happened, but every episode I've come to expect like some kind of revelation or somebody go, you know, like in this one, it seemed like it was Spartacus taking another turn in his just accepting his, I guess, kind of a like career path, like some, you know, a lot of people do, like, all right, this is my fate. I'm just going to try to accept it. So everyone, we've seen something like this in it. And it's kind of refreshing because some series, you get those episodes where it's like, all right, you know, this was important, kind of, but it's just a filler-sode.
Yeah, there's a pronounced lack of filler in this whole series. In this episode, it's just more on that level. There's no filler whatsoever. Yeah.
Every episode's important. You can't really skip one.
Can't really have a filler in a 4-season show.
Oh, you'd be surprised. Mm. Let's see. What are some shows that have some like filler content? Like when
Walking Dead.
Well, sometimes. don't knock it.
The Farm. The Farm.
Okay, The Farm. Fine. But there you go. You know, there were some in that season where you didn't need. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about Sons of Anarchy. You know, granted, I haven't gone through the first season yet, but it sounds like the first season is just kind of like, meh. But this is one of those TV shows, kind of like the first season of Dexter, where every episode seems important. So it gets you good.
Well, with this episode, for me, it's because I have a different approach to watching them. I am actually reevaluating how I rank my favorite episodes now because I'm just seeing them differently. And this is actually one of my top favorites now. But I'll probably say that about everyone from this
point
on. Yeah,
it's kind of like it's one of those shows where when you're watching it, every episode, your favorite episode, because it's there then.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and start with the recap. Anybody want to talk about the title at all? Any thoughts about the title, Great and Unfortunate Things, before we get started on the recap?
Well, I mean, just the obvious thing that you remember that Sura told him at the very beginning of, well, not the very beginning, but in episode 1, she said that you're destined for great and unfortunate things. That's what the gods had told her, at any rate.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's part of her prophecy. So this episode actually opens with a memory involving Spartacus and Sura, and they're doing it. And it actually turns out to be the first night that they met, and he did not know her name before he banged her.
And had a bad reputation.
Yeah, he's a bit of a womanizer around the Thracian village, it seems. You know, every woman knows your bad news kind of thing.
Which he didn't.
But every woman that showed up to her.
Yeah.
Can't blame him. So she says to him that, and he was like, well, if I have such a bad reputation, why are you here in bed with me then? And she said the gods had led her to his bed. And he said, what else did the gods tell you? And she said the gods told her he would never love another woman.
Her Han Solo line.
Yeah.
It really was. That was some smooth.
She just walked away right after that. Mm-hmm. She's like, you're never going to love another woman.
That was fucking smooth.
It was smooth.
Oh, yeah.
And we had I can't remember where it was, but there was a moment where we could have heard his name. And once again, we're not given his real name.
Yeah, they're purposefully avoiding telling us his real name.
We're just gonna start calling him the doctor. I don't think anybody knows. The doctor. which doctor is he?
I guess.
The tough one.
Yeah, he'd have to be the very, very first.
Yeah.
The tough one.
Hmm. So now we cut to a shrouded form. It is Sura in the present. Spartacus mourns. He's now carrying her to a pyre. He's walking down a line, which is flanked by gladiators in a very ceremonious fashion. We see Asher eating munchies.
Yeah, everybody else is just looking really solemn and has a lot of respect for what's going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this, you know, cockfucker is in the back just, you know, eating M&Ms or whatever it is, yeah. Pistachios. And, you know, just kind of like going, yeah, it's another day at the Ludus.
Well,
like
he can't use this for anything, you know.
Yeah, he's pretty indifferent. You're right. There's nothing in this scenario that he can use to his advantage. Mm-hmm. So he kind of uses it with a certain level of indifference.
Yeah, it just shows more of his character, you know, bookie with no heart, which usually it's that way.
I thought it was significant that Varro was at the end, you know, with the torch mm-hmm. ready to go. Mm-hmm. That scene got me choked up.
Yeah.
I won't lie. That scene got me choked up because, I mean, could you imagine doing that?
Ah, oh, fuck no.
But
he did something that surprised me, too, was put the garter strap or his little leather band from her and burnt it with her. And I'm a sucker for keeping, like, little bits of mm-hmm. stuff here and there, you know, that remind me of, like, a day or something that happened. I'm shocked that he put that in the prior to let it burn and go up with her.
Personally, I would have kept it, too.
Yeah.
Because I have that sentimental side where I like to keep little trinkets and things like that. But, you know, when we get to the end of the episode, we can kind of discuss it more. But it's mm-hmm. pretty significant, I think, that he burned it with her.
Yeah, it was a symbol of his hope. And I think that he no longer has that hope.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's done.
Yeah, but I mean, he's even smelling it. You know, I mean, it's like, to me, it would have been my last bit of attachment to my wife. You know, because he has absolutely nothing else. He doesn't have the pictures like we do nowadays. He has absolutely nothing. That's something that I would have kept.
So there's like a little bit of symbology going on here because mm-hmm. not only are you burning her, but he's kind of...
Yeah, letting go.
He's like burning that whole part of his persona mm-hmm. and connection away from himself.
Which he, at the end of the episode, you see him actually kill himself. Mm-hmm. So it does all...
Spoiler alert.
Badiatis and Lucretia look on from the balcony. Petros looks on, and he's also immersed in his own personal grief, and he's completely alone here. So this episode, I noticed you have a mirror image. You have Petros mourning Barca's supposed, you know, mm-hmm. departure. And you have Spartacus also grieving his wife, and they both have different experiences still because Spartacus is not alone. He's got this whole gladiator support procession, and Petros is completely alone in his grief. And this is very important for how both of them eventually handle their grief. And while Petros is looking on, Gnaeus looks at Petros covetously.
And he's been shooting him these looks for the past couple of episodes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They've been leading you or building up to this.
So now there's nothing
protecting him.
Yeah, there's nothing protecting him.
He's he doesn't have a squirrel master. Which is what? Half baked reference? I can't help it.
You know, I'm not a fish. Joke about it. I'm a man.
All I remember from Half Baked is the pearl necklace.
You would remember that.
I didn't know what it was. You had to explain it to me. And now I use it all the time. Anyway. So now Spartacus, so Varro hands Spartacus the torch and Spartacus lights the funeral pyre. And his visage is now wreathed in flames, and then his image is superimposed with a hand scooping water. And I don't know, and the hand does belong to Spartacus, and you cut to him sitting actually in front of a shallow pool. But I thought that was an interesting transition mm-hmm. image, and I don't know exactly what it means, but I don't know if you guys had any thoughts as to why they chose to do that, because later there's a transition scene with Dai falling. Mm-hmm. And some bone pieces when they were playing games, and I do think that has significance. But I was wondering if you guys thought anything about this at all.
Well, there's the, you know, the visual imagery is always, you know, striking. They're doing the juxtaposition of you go from fire to water right away, mm-hmm. and it could be his burning passion coming back to cold reality, you know, and now because now he's sitting down with Badiatis, and Badiatis mm-hmm. is you know.
It's also too could be both a cleansing thing also, because fire is gonna burn the body, it's gonna cleanse, you know. They burn forests to kind of do a renew thing, and then it shows him cleaning, you know, like, what wasn't he kind of like rinsing himself off a little bit with like the handful of water? I don't think he was drinking it, was he?
No.
No,
so
I don't
maybe
think so,
it was just that kind of like a small little transition to that. So I don't know. I mean, it could
another foreshadowing to rebirth, maybe too.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, it just reminds me of also like holy water that they have in
Catholic churches,
mm-hmm. but I don't know if that has any.
Don't know.
Significance there. So yeah, we see Spartacus sitting there, and Batiatus is standing behind him. And they begin to discuss Sura's death. Batiatus is saying the fault is his. He should have doubled the guard, tripled the guard, and even sent Barca along before giving him his freedom. It's just, what a shit he is.
Mm-hmm.
John Hannah, who plays Batiatus, is such a fucking great actor. And I know we've said that, you know, a dozen times at least during, you know, the course of this cast. But if you look at the way, you know, Spartacus isn't looking at his face while he's saying all this stuff. You know, he's just hearing it. And, you know, Batiatus is just looking at him out of the corner of his eye and saying, oh, it's my fault. I should have done this. I should have done that. The fault lies with me. You know, the roads from wherever are dangerous and everything. And he's shooting Spartacus these glances to see if it's working. So what's coming out of his mouth and what's in his eyes is totally different. Oh, yeah. And I mean, you got to be a good actor to pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
And Spartacus says, no, you kept your word. The fault lies with the men who took her life and Claudius Glaber.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen Claudius Glaber in a while.
He wasn't even really mentioned in the last couple episodes, I don't think.
Other than his wife.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Little hooker.
Slut alert.
Uh-huh. She's a little hooker, man.
And Batiatus is, in a way, trying to redirect Spartacus's mind by talking about the glory of gladiator victories to come and all its accoutrements. And Spartacus says, Spartacus is not my name. She didn't call me by that. And Batiatus says, it is now. And he says it with this, it's almost like you can see Batiatus is already irritated with Spartacus trying to resist. Yeah.
He's put a lot of effort into fucking Spartacus. He just think he's getting sick of it in this episode.
Well, he really, you know, from the beginning, Batiatus wanted to protect his investment, you know. But as it's gone on, you've seen that he's getting a return on his investment, probably more so than he ever would have hoped.
Oh, absolutely.
But he still has to put up with a bunch of shit from him. You know what I mean? He just pushes the envelope at every turn.
Which should be a sign, because I think Batiatus thinks the gods are working in his favor, but the gods are really working, I think, towards Spartacus. And so with, you know, the resistance he gets from Spartacus, it should be a clue, I think. But you know how
but
it
he's
goes.
So
People
caught
try
up
to
in,
see what they want to see.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. And Batiatus is caught up in his own hubris.
Exactly.
He's, as we see in a couple more scenes, I think, or it might be the next scene, I'm not sure, but he's aspiring to greater heights than the station he's at right now. He doesn't want to be a Lanista for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we see Batiatus paying off that cart driver that had escorted Sura, and the cart driver is alive and healthy, completely unscathed, seemingly. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering about that. The first time I watched it, I didn't notice that was the same person. I thought that was the guy that had set the whole thing up, but it was the cart driver. He was the one.
Quite the ruse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a little bit of exposition to show us, the viewer, that he actually, at Batiatus's behest, killed Sura, or almost killed
her. Blood all over him.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pretty cunning ploy, but I didn't catch it. I'll say, as a rewatch,
I didn't catch it
until this time. I was like, is that the same guy? And I was going to bring it up, but I didn't. I guess that's him.
Yeah, I didn't know until I'd watched it again. Now we have a scene between Lucretia and Batiatus. Lucretia says that Batiatus went to great expense just to have Sura delivered near dead. Should he have just told Spartacus that she perished on the road? And Batiatus explains that Spartacus needed to see her death because he would have never believed it.
Yeah.
I believe that. I agree, that's true. Yeah.
Me too. And Lucretia also makes it known that she did not like being left in the cold regarding his recent schemings. he again makes mention that he would like to keep her unstained. She says her hands hold his, are they not unstained by the touch? Which is, that is actually a true thing for her to say. I mean, or a valid thing for her to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's plus, a guilt by association.
It's, exactly. It's also protecting himself by her not knowing, because somebody could capture her and get all the information out of her. So if she doesn't know, then he's kind of protecting himself.
Yeah.
From the less people knowing, the less, you know, he can, they can use her or whoever else against him.
Yeah, I would be terrible at stuff like that. I would never think like that.
Well, I don't want to admit something like that. I'd probably be all right with it. I mean, I'm not saying I'd be that dirty, but I think if I had to, if I was put in that position, I might be able to.
Because you're a chess player.
Be dirty. Possibly. Yeah, that's true. I use my powers for good.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah, right.
My good. No.
Yeah.
So you say.
Define good.
Yeah. He voices, so Badiatis voices plans to mold Spartacus into the greatest gladiator ever. And we now actually hear what you were just alluding to, Badiatis' designs toward a senatorial seat. The filming's great, how they had the camera, like, bird's eye view mm-hmm. on him. I like how the camera works with Badiatis a lot, actually, because there's another scene later.
Yeah, the camera guys are good.
Yeah,
they hit are. A lot of cool angles on a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm. So now we have Doctore checking on Crixus. Crixus is still, you know, feverish. And he tells the medicus to let him know if his condition changes. And then Doctore is walking down the halls of the quarters down there and encounters Petros. And Petros wants to ask Doctore regarding the ownership of the birds that have been left behind by Barca.
This is the first time that Doctore finds out that he didn't supposedly have enough money to get both of them free, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's starting to finally get, it sounds like he's finally getting some of the, I mean, of course we know he's finally getting some of the pieces of the puzzle, but it just shows his interest and it shows that, okay, you know, you could see it in his eyes that he already thinks something's wrong. Mm-hmm. Right off the bat, you can tell he's not going to let it go. He's a smart guy. Obviously.
Which is a dangerous thing for him to start to look into.
Absolutely. Because he's still a slave.
And you know, if he finds out the truth, he's not going to shy away from it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Because he's not afraid to die.
Mm-mm.
He's one of those characters to where the truth is paramount and whatever the cost is mm-hmm. of bringing it out.
And he's one of my favorite now. He's really steadily grown to be one of my favorite characters in the show.
Yeah. I like Doctore a lot.
Manly man. He is. He's a manly man.
And he's got the coolest clothes too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of like
a built on six pack.
Yeah,
the Wrath of Khan six pack.
The Wrath.
You know what I'm talking about?
CD Alpha 6.
Yeah, because that wasn't, they actually built his Khan's six pack. Yeah, that wasn't actually his chest.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah, I heard something about it a while back. Where they're doing like the background mm-hmm. on Star Trek for that movie. They actually built that.
You know, the Kirk's bastard kid in that movie
mm-hmm.
kind of looks like Vero does if he was younger, doesn't he? All curly blonde
hair. I
wish
I knew his name. I quit calling him Tommy Gunn.
I like that you call him Tommy Gunn.
He looks more like Tommy Gunn.
So next we see Petros crying in a cell and he's holding a pigeon in his hand.
Poor Petros, though. I mean, the guy's just got it bad right now. He's heartbroken. He's raped. Beat up.
That's what's about to happen.
It really is terrible. You know? I mean, I make jokes, but that guy's had it fucking bad.
Yeah, he has.
You know, it's funny. Not funny, but it's interesting to me that as graphic as this show can get sexually mm-hmm. and violently,
they don't
really, they leave everything about this up to your imagination. Because
which makes it worse.
What's his name? Gnaeus? Comes in the door and just gives him this like grin, like, oh yeah, I'm about to have some fun. And then Petros starts crying and that's the end of the scene. Next mm-hmm. time you see Petros, he has a big shiner, you know, he's got mm-hmm. a black eye, but they don't show that. And it seems like something that they wouldn't shy away from, but they do.
But that goes to my point before, sometimes less is more.
Yeah.
You know?
Like whatever you imagine happened there would probably be worse than whatever they could get away with showing you.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm glad. I guess that makes sense.
I'm
glad too. You know,
but it is like you said. It really does. You know,
yeah.
leave a lot to the imagination. Because he just gets, he looks worse and worse as the show goes.
Because you feel so bad for him anyway. It would just be like, you know, almost like driving the point home too much if they actually showed it. You know, they just put the viewer through a little bit of agony for that. You know? Mm-hmm. You get the point.
Yeah.
So next we see Spartacus is now alone in his room and he's contemplating over his dagger. And then Varro walks in and comments disapprovingly about how the having that dagger is unwise. And I just want to point out this is a mirror image of Petros and Spartacus, because Petros is holding a pigeon in his hand sitting down in his quarters, which was a symbol of freedom for him.
Yeah.
And the dagger was also a symbol of freedom for Spartacus, because that's what he was going to use to free Sura when Sura arrived.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's a good point.
There's also another parallel, too, because if you look at a pigeon, I mean, a dove is just a white pigeon, basically. Mm-hmm. It's a symbol for peace. Mm-hmm. And that dagger is obviously a symbol for violence.
Right.
So there's that going on as well.
Mm. Contrast. And then, yeah, Aeneas approaches his room. Aeneas is not there, you know, on gregarious terms. And Varro walks in, but he's there as a friend. So it's just showing how the difference between them two. Even though their experience seems similar.
The dagger reversed.
So Spartacus is feeling that Sura's death is his fault. Varro makes an effort to comfort him and dissuade him from such thinking. And he tells Spartacus at the bet that he best throw that dagger over the cliff.
Yeah, because, I mean, if he gets caught with it, then he's fucked.
He'll probably get scourged, as they did to slaves. Which is like whipping with bits of metal on the end of the
flailing skin off.
So now renovations are happening in the villa. Bodiatis, Lucretia are walking through, overlooking the renovations as they happen.
Enjoying all the money that they, you can tell they are living it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like, okay, it's time to get all that new vinyl siding we wanted. New roof. And
Bodiatis is looking forward to the days when Sycophants will be knocking on his door. And Navia arrives hurriedly with Medicus.
There was something about sucking cock in this one. And
he's looking forward to people wanting to suck his cock of fortune.
Yes. And Lucretia says that they'll be lining up.
They'll need to get in line. Or she's also sucking his cock, too.
Yeah.
That's the way I took it.
I think they have to get in line behind me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Still in her red wig, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's at home with Bodiatis. She wears the wig. It seems maybe that's his favorite.
So Crixus is awake.
That's her relaxed wig.
Or
that's right. Her comfort wig. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Crixus is awake. He is still far from recovered, but he asks when he will be able to fight again.
That nasty doctor putting looks like wet wads of toilet paper in his wounds.
It does, like paper mache. Like, doesn't it? Like
European toilet paper.
Toilet paper and wax just kind of glob together. Like, I just got done using this on my ass.
Yeah.
Smush.
Waste not, want not.
No wonder I've got a fever. Yeah. Is that doo doo on my bandages?
You just go to sleep now.
Yeah. Little doo doo balls.
Ew. Bodiatis says that as soon as he recovered, he can fight again and walks away to talk with the Medicus. Lucretia takes the opportunity to say to Crixus that it would be improper for her to visit him.
But she pauses, too. She's like waiting, like, all right, my man's just far enough away. And then gives him his little, you know, I'm going to be right here, but I can't come down.
I'm going to send Navia, my slave, instead.
And then he kind of, like, relaxes a little, and I think she thinks that she was happy to hear it from her and not about his real girlfriend, his secret girlfriend.
And so I wrote here, is this a love is blind kind of thing, or is she a little bit crazy? Because I think she thinks that he reciprocates her feelings.
Oh, absolutely.
And he doesn't.
Well, he's such a man of this is my life. You know, even when he talks about gladiators and everything, he really accepts his station in life. So, you know, I think you're right in some ways to where it's like love is blind, because how many people have you known where they're cheating on them and they find out and they still don't believe it.
They just go for any crumbs they can get.
Exactly. You know,
I think it goes back to the whole hubris aspect, and Lucretia and Bodiatis both have it. Because Bodiatis is thinking the gods are working in his favor because he's too, you know, he can't see past the end of his nose. And it's because of their position in life. They just, they're used to having things revolve around them.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really enter into their minds that it might be any other way than the way they perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what I think it is. But it could be the love is blind thing too. I mean, she just might not want to.
It's a little mixture, I think, of all of it. I really do. That and Crixus is just a good soldier. That's what I do.
He is. And I've joked to Steve, but I really believe this. Like, you know, if you were to compare them to a relationship in another show, Crixus and Spartacus, Spartacus is John Crichton and Crixus is Aaron Soon.
I can see that.
Yep.
Good soldier, do what I have to do to get the job done. Turn a blind eye to the things I don't like because it has a means to an end. I like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
I do too.
That would have made for some awkward scenes on
although it
on
would have
Talon,
been nice to have seen Aaron Soon talk smack naked. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
She could have helped us out there to make it a little easier, but
maybe they could have totally brought her in on this show. She's Australian.
Who would she have been?
I don't know. Anybody. She could have been a Roman.
She needs something important. She needs it.
She could have been the only female gladiator.
Yeah. Yeah.
She could have been a Roman.
She wouldn't have let Crixus stand there and talk naked. She would have cut it off.
Rank and regimen.
Mm-hmm. Put it around her neck like a trophy.
So Spartacus is now kneeling before the cliff. Petros arrives with his practice swords. Petros now has a black eye. And Spartacus notices with alarm, but is unable to question him because Doctore announces time for training. And Spartacus is now to face Doctore.
Now, I have a quick question because it dawned on me that Spartacus is dual-wielding swords and not going with the shield. Has it been a few episodes that he's been doing this? Did he fight in the last arena?
No.
With two swords?
His last fight with Diocles, he had a shield, and Batiatus decided that because he was badass enough to take out Theocles, there was a little scene where he said, you're going to change your fighting style and you're going to fight with two swords.
Like Theocles did.
Okay. Like Theocles
so
did.
He's been training with the two swords then.
Exactly.
Starting to, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so tough. Dual wielding. Tough ass bastard.
And that's an intimidating opponent when you're like, they don't have a shield. Because that just makes you think like, well, why doesn't he have a shield?
That's why Darth Maul was a badass. It's true.
Two swords.
For a very short time, he was.
Don't get me started.
Oh, wait. It's
don't get
anything.
Me started.
Nothing. No spoilers here. Ah.
The Doctore and Spartacus spar, and this is where we see Doctore has, he was not fooled. He has not forgotten Spartacus's treachery. He says the only reason why Batiatus does not know is because Spartacus' victory over Theocles.
Yeah, which was, it's fairly revealing because he does come out and, you know, hey, I know you fucked me up.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, my intention wasn't to see you never rise again. It was to see you sleep. That was my choice or
choice between the two.
Yeah. So it was either I was going to have to try to kill you or knock you out.
Although he did give him a handful of drugs.
Yeah.
Just
saying. Yeah. Yeah. That was
he wasn't too careful. Yeah.
Yeah.
He still gave him a handful of dope.
That was risky.
He got a line cook's dose of whatever
absolutely.
It was. And you know, the thing, Doctore says basically that, you know, if I was to tell, Dominus about this, you'd be crucified.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I like about this scene is Spartacus just throws down his stuff and he says, then part your lips and see it done.
Mm-hmm.
And then walks away and he's like, bam, just throws it down. And just says, go for it. I think I'm scared, you know. I don't care. I just burned my wife last night. You know, you think you're going to scare me with that? So.
Doctore still warns Spartacus that the next time he thinks to escape, he better kill him. Better kill Doctore. So now some days have passed because of the way the sky was and everything. Days are passing and the way they show time lapse or whatever.
Yeah, you get the moon, stars,
and early
sun,
in the episode,
clouds.
You find out it's almost a year that he's been at the Ludus now because he's like, I've been searching for the Thracian's wife for almost a year, cart driver. Mm-hmm. So you actually find out it's been.
Which is important for coming up scene, too, with Varro, the time frame that they've all been there.
Because it, to me, it's only been a couple of weeks. You know?
Yeah, it seems like it would have only been a couple of weeks.
So that was good. It's a good point of the whole time thing. Now I'll make sure I pay attention to the skies because usually I'm like, oh, sky.
So some days passed, like I already said, and we have the arrival of Mercado. Do you remember Mercado from Legends when they had the display of gladiators when Baro had to fuck the slave, and he was the one that Batiatus would approach for his patronage, and he was
So
there. So
yeah,
they
I do remember that, yeah.
they began the whole process of this particular match at that time, and so Mercado has a request that he wants to reenact his grandfather's victory, which actually involves his grandfather, which was a Roman governor, fighting the Thracian tribe, the Medi, which is actually the same tribe that Spartacus is from, according to the show. And initially he wants Crixus, but Crixus is not fully recovered yet. And Batiatus offers Gnaeus instead. But then Mercado says, well, what about the Spartacus? And he ends up having to pay an extra 40%. But Batiatus throws in the six prisoners for free. So now we're in the cafeteria, and Gnaeus continues to torment Petros.
Poor bastard.
Varro and Spartacus see this, and Spartacus interrupts by telling Petros to get him some more wine. And Asher is also.
Was it water or wine? I
I think
think
it was
he's.
wine, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was wine.
Oh, okay.
I think it was
It shows
wine.
too that Spartacus still has a heart. He's not totally, because a lot of people in his spot, with his wife being dead and everything he's been through, wouldn't even care about him. And he shows
Yeah.
he's got a heart. He doesn't like to see anybody. He's like the
Suffer
champion for the little
needlessly.
guy, kind of.
Well, I mean, they share that suffering. I
But no one
think.
else is helping him, though. You know, other gladiators see it going on. They're just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, which is disappointing.
Spartacus is a bully fighter, too.
But, that's Spartacus's path. It's to free the oppressed. So, Asher apparently is also the local postman. He returns from a letter delivery for Varro with a surprise guest, and it's Varro's wife. And as we see, this encounter does not go very well.
And I had a feeling it was going to from the beginning of it, because it's kind of like it just had that setup, like the Dear John letter to the guys that are out fighting, you know, in wars. It just had that, just a tinge before it even went down, you know. And then of course we see that, you know, she's not happy.
Well, she was raped, and it just seems that rape
Do you
didn't
think
have
she
the
was raped
levity.
though, for
Yeah,
real?
she says he forced himself on
Yeah,
her.
but she says that after she realizes that he's really super pissed off. Because at first she's like, yeah, it's so and so from the market. He's a friend of mine, you know. And then when she sees that, okay, he's really pissed off, I took it more if she throws that in to try and deflect some of the aggression at her.
I think she was raped. It's just that their view of it, of rape at the time, might have, fell the fault of the woman. Because even after she said that, he forced himself on
Yeah,
me,
you
he's like,
couldn't
you couldn't
do
fight
it,
like I'm fighting here.
yeah. Yeah.
Reality, men are stronger than women. It's not,
So you think that is at the point where she started bringing up, you've been gone for all this time, and
Well, there's obviously
you
some bad
back.
blood there because he gambled their money
Yeah, well,
and
that really shows his gambling problem later on in the
yeah.
episode too.
And she's got other issues because she, I don't, when he says that it was a friend who turned him towards writing her a letter, she was like, a friend? Like, what the fuck? It wasn't me?
Exactly why I think really she slept with him and then threw that out there.
Yeah.
And just it just seems that way to me. I guess it's from a guy's perspective on it
See,
too.
I am half and half on this one, because I think it might have just been a lame excuse, because she's just lonely and she, you know,
Yeah, I'm not
wanted
faulting
somebody to
her for
take care
wanting
of
to be
her, and
with
she's
somebody.
already pissed at him because he gambled away all their money and then has to be away from the
And then
family
there's
for 2 years.
no letters or anything are going to her. She finally gets one.
Well, they had an agreement not to send
Yeah,
any
but
letters.
still.
Yeah.
Come
But
on.
you know, it's one of those things. I don't want anything for my birthday. Don't get me anything. And then
Exactly.
when, you know, you
You
don't
don't
get
do
anything.
it.
I'm not
Bad
talking
luck,
about
Joe.
you. But I'm just talking about women in general as a stereotype. It's kind of
No.
like, and
I mean,
I'm not
guys too.
saying,
Guys are just as bad as
yeah,
dudes.
they
Oh, I
are.
don't
They
want
are.
anything.
Yeah,
Secret
don't
me,
worry
you
about
do
it.
that.
Don't give me nothing.
Absolutely.
You know, so I'm of a divided mind on this particular thing. I think that there's enough kind of hostility from her towards her mm-hmm. husband, to where I don't think she's just doing it.
This would be a good one for the listeners to let us know what they think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we'd be pretty evenly divided between men and women as far as responses are concerned, because
I just think, you know, in her social situation, she probably did, you know, befriend this guy, Titus, with hopes that he would help her because mm-hmm. her husband was gone, and Titus expected something in return. She didn't want to return in the manner that he wanted, mm-hmm. you know, and he maybe just, that's what he thought he deserved, and he mm-hmm. took it from her. So, you know, I think.
Or maybe she went mm-hmm. along with it where it wasn't completely.
She's hating on her husband, too. This son of a bitch spends all of our money, goes into debt where it sounded like they were coming to collect. Like Asher, you know, it's a real debt because he was in the pits trying to make money. He obviously likes throwing dice. He has a gambling problem. So she's going to hate on him for that. And then she's going to blame all the stupid gambling on raising her son without his father, not having really much money coming in because he's not fighting in big events. You know, he's at the bottom tier, so he can't be sending that much money in. So I think it's also, well, this guy's, you know, coming in, being nice to me. Maybe I'll sleep with him. Maybe the other guy got some milk and cookies and didn't want to stick around afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Possible. Possible.
And it's all like, oh, well, some bitch.
Well, I didn't see it that way at all.
And I still don't. I just think things are complicated, you know.
Fix this one for us.
Things are complicated with women, and especially when they're in a situation where they have very little power, where they can, mm-hmm. you know, support their family. So, you know.
Because he was going into this with Spartacus rejuvenating his, because we don't know how he felt before Spartacus. And it even sounds like, well, my friend, I saw what he's going through with his wife. Now I want to be a better man because my friends are, I mean, fuck, your best friend Spartacus, who is a manly man. You know, he's Mr. Man. I do the right thing. Well, I mean, that's the whole, yeah, you know, it's the whole, even in those times, who was it? Marcus Aurelius had some stuff on, in Gladiator, what was the name of Russell Crowe? Yeah, but what was Russell Crowe's character's name?
Maximus.
Okay. Well, that was actually a real person, but they figured out through Marcus Aurelius's writings that he represented what a man should be, his morals, everything. So when your best friend is like that, where he's really what your father tries to teach you to be in some families, I think he wanted to be a better person. So now he's talking to his wife thinking, okay, I'm going to show her I'm turning a new leaf while I'm in this fucking hole trying to fight. And then this gets thrown at him. So I think in a separate situation, he would be like, you're raped. I'm going to go get that motherfucker. But it kind of just, you know, it's kind of like a kick while you're down. So he reacted the way he did, like in the middle of a fight you can do, you throw that insult back to try and take advantage of the argument.
Well, he blames her.
Oh, absolutely. He could tell. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then he looks over after he said it and he regretted it because, you know, his son's sitting there, what, three and a half? Like,
you thought he regretted it?
I do, actually. Because he turns and looks at his son. Well, I mean, I think there's a little regret because they're fighting in front of their kid.
I think he probably regrets the harsh way he said stuff mm-hmm. or what he said, but, you know, he still feels the same way as he turns around to leave.
Oh, yeah, but I think he... I mean, I've said things I know I shouldn't have been in the middle of an argument. And instantly in my head, it was like, oh, fuck, you know, I shouldn't have gone that far. That's fucked up. Well, I mean, I might be the only person that does that, but I do. When I argue, I fight for the jugular. I fight to win.
Okay. So now we've got a scene. Where am I? Bodiatus has commissioned a stone bust of Spartacus at great expense, and he expects Spartacus to appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
I did this for you. And explains the details of Mercado's upcoming gladiatorial match, and Spartacus is offended and refuses. Understandably.
Yeah, you can definitely understand why he wouldn't want to do that. He's like, you know.
Yeah, he even said his dad had mentioned the guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
That'd
be like being Jewish and dressing up like a Nazi.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty much
slaughtering Jews. People. Yeah, exactly.
I need you to play Hitler.
It's really a hard thing to do. You know? And he tries to fight it. I give him credit. He tries to fight it. No, I'm not doing it.
And then Batiata says he does not ask, he commands. Spartacus is no longer of Thrace. He is destined for great and wonderful things. Batiata also says that Spartacus' mind is clouded by grief and he should pause to clear it.
And then he gets escorted out by one of the guards. Mm-hmm. And they're just all handling him all rough. You know, come on.
Come on, trash.
Yeah.
So now we have a scene between Crixus and Navia. Crixus is embarrassed and angry about his current condition, especially having her bathe him like a baby. Navia tries to turn his mind toward their opportunity to spend time together. And then Doctoria enters. And Barca is mentioned because Crixus is disappointed that Barca has not visited him. And this is where Doctore discovers that Navia was present when Barca was set free. Crixus is surprised that Barca would leave without Petros. He says that Barca would have sooner parted with his own cock. And Doctore leaves with suspicions in his mind again, and Crixus says aloud to Navia, "Barca gone, Spartacus champion, have I awoken to a world of shit?"
Which, you know, Navia's got to kind of take that on the chin a little bit because, you know, she's right there taking care of him. She's like, well, what am I, chopped liver?
Yeah,
you know,
bitch.
I get to hang out down here with the Domina's blessing. So it's like we get to spend some quality time together. They, you know, they're not going to be getting it on in his condition. But, I mean, they get to talk and be around each other.
And he's got somebody clean finally taking care of him.
Yeah. Not
fucking old nasty dude.
Yeah,
bag.
Mr. Scabies.
Dandruff was probably falling down into his wounds.
Sprinkle. He's probably their dentist, too.
Yeah, probably.
Nasty.
Probably. So this is where we have that transition scene of the dye and other bone pieces tumbling down to a table. And we've brought up Wheel of Time before, but, you know, it makes me think of Matt.
Oh, instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it was that the
damn dice rolling in my head.
Yeah, which would start when he, you know, and it would stop, I think, once he made a decision and he ended up on the path that he was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of, I think, what's going on with Spartacus here. He's needs to be set on the right path, as Sura had said. This gaming table, so this is it. This is all landing on the gaming table, which is in the foreground, and we see in the back, Varro and Spartacus sitting together. Varro says Spartacus is a fool to refuse Batiatus.
Yeah, he's doing a little venting.
Well, you know, you've brought up before that Varro speaks for us, the viewer, the little people.
Yeah.
And right here, it's a great example of that because Varro's basically just railing into Spartacus and just letting him know everything that we'd like to tell him as the viewer. Like, hey, pull your head out of your ass. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get out of this place. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get past Doctora. You need to do what you're told for a time. Bide your time. Make some sort of plan for whatever it is you'd like to do later. But right now, you have to play along because you have very little choice. So stop being, you know, a blockhead about it.
Varro and Sura always work on Spartacus from the same angle, too. It's another thing. They always have the same, like, anytime he has memories of Sura and anytime Varro is laying into him, they're always approaching from the same
angle. That's a really good point.
Varro says, or already said that, so Spartacus is refusing, again, to slaughter his own countrymen. Varro says they are his countrymen in dress only. Varro says they are murderers and rapists, the latter said with a bit more vehemence.
Plus, he feels helpless because he can't go get the guy that raped his wife. He's stuck in
Ludus
because of his fucking gambling. But it's interesting to me because it shows that at this part, you know, he's all like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to go hang out with people I deserve to hang out with. And he goes to the gambling table and just like any addict sits down.
And now
gambles to get his mind off of his issues and everything because that's what addiction does. It's his way of just like, fuck it. I'm just going to give in, be the douchebag that I am because this is how he feels, I think.
Yeah.
He's been acting douchey all day.
Yes, all this is his fault. All his situation is his fault. Unlike Spartacus who thinks it is. You know, Tommy Gunn, it's his fault.
Mm-hmm.
All of his gambling. So he goes and sits down and gambles and that's when it really struck home to me that, okay, he has major gambling.
Well, you know,
issues.
They
before it was like, all right, yeah, they gambled a little, but now it shows, okay, he's falling back on his issues.
You know, a lot of times people will use darkness as a metaphor or a shadow as a metaphor for addiction mm-hmm. or compulsive behavior or whatever. Yeah. And you notice right when he sits down, a shadow passes over mm-hmm. all the light in that scene. You notice that? And then it cuts to the next scene. That a
right
dark,
when Varro sits down?
Right when he sits down, it's like a pan above his head, and there's a shadow or a darkness that goes mm-hmm. across all the light in that scene.
And I'm surprised Asher hasn't awesome. Taken advantage of this. Like, he hasn't figured it out that Tommy Gunn's here for gambling because a bookie usually smells that out in people, and then they start giving him little bets, just like with a crack dealer or coke dealer, give him a little freebie and then start taking that money.
Yeah.
Which is why I think they don't like him, because he does feed off the, you know, weaknesses of all of them mm-hmm. and they have given into it from time to time he probably has no mercy in the long run.
It's his
business. They know through those, I think, encounters with Asher mm-hmm. that he's shit.
But, you know, there's still time for Asher to work that angle. So, you know, don't give up on that yet.
Yeah. Asher just needs the Italian goons to go break arms and legs, and he'd be like a full-blown, like, regular bookie.
Spartacus and Petros encounter each other in the sleeping quarters hallway. Petros now has another black eye to match the other.
Oh, and his lip was busted. There was some fresh scrapes.
Yeah, he's looking pretty sorry.
Yeah, I felt terrible for him. This whole episode, I just felt terrible.
Spartacus asks if it was Gnaeus and offers to settle the matter. Petros asks bitterly, to what end? Which was mm-hmm. Spartacus's first line in the entire show.
Oh, yeah.
And then Spartacus tries to offer words of comfort to Petros regarding Barca and fate. These fail. Petros only echoes what Spartacus has been feeling himself, because fate is felt more keenly on the people who have been left behind, is what he says. So now we have a scene with Alethea and Lucretia. We haven't seen Alethea in a while, and here she is.
And Lucretia has the blonde wig.
Yep.
Yep.
That's her tail.
Yep. It is, really. I have things afoot. Plans within plans. Let me put my blonde wig on. Make this happen. Look younger, more feisty.
Lucretia's talking of their newfound good fortune, and Alethea asks if it extends downward. And Lucretia says, what the hell do you mean by that?
Muff diver.
Muff diver?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
She's basically asking her, did you get knocked up?
Lucretia says she was unable to follow through, and Alethea wants to know And then she's like, well, how come you didn't hook up with the other guy? And
she was slick, too, in this part.
Oh, yeah. Ugh. She's good at her games. And Alethea wants to know if the other man is Solonius. Lucretia says she'd rather fuck an eel, which is gross.
Yeah.
Oof. Like, he must be pretty gross. He'd rather fuck a slimy-ass eel.
That was
Daltrey.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
She's referring to Daltrey, yeah. Yep. So, it's funny. That and also that Alethea would assume it would be Solonius to mm-hmm. begin with anyway, because that's Bodiatus's nemesis, which just shows how Alethea operates.
And how she thinks, too. Like, mm-hmm.
She also knows what's going on, because right after, you know, she lets Lucretia kind of slip away from that question like an eel. You know, she turns around and says, so how fair is Crixus? Mm-hmm. You know, and then
she makes her to stop talking, like, oh, let's not talk about this. I don't want to. Because she goes into, was it somebody? Well, somebody not wealthy.
Yeah, so it was just a physical thing.
Squirm a little bit, and then she drops Crixus, and it's like, huh?
And they're both being smooth about it, but you know that they both know.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fun to watch.
She wants the info bad. slippery
thing.
She's
looking for an in
there. She always shows up during the gladiator fight. She's got a little bloodlust in her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's like a shark. She smells the blood.
Oh, yeah. She gets off on
it. It's like, yeah, gladiators are chum mm-hmm. for her. So Varro and Spartacus are now sharing a meal. They notice that Petros' birds are free. And this leads Spartacus
I knew he was dead.
Varro to investigate.
I knew it.
And Petros has freed himself.
Mm-hmm.
Poor kid hung himself.
And I thought it was effed up that they put them back in their cages in an empty cell. Why not just let the pigeons go or eat them or something? Why put it back in? Because who's going to take care of them?
Well, apparently Navia is. But I guess we don't know that at the time until a later scene, but she's going to take care of the birds. But I, you know, honestly,
I think they should
maybe
let
the
him
fifth
go.
Season will be about the pigeons.
Spartacus, the wrath of pigeons.
Be a good like clip. It'd be what's that show on that Cartoon Network? Robot Chicken.
Oh, yeah, they did Robot Chicken Spartacus. Honestly, I think the whole pigeon angle was it was a plot device to be able to, and we'll talk about it with the discussion between Navia and Doctor a little bit later on. But I think it was like a set piece or a plot device to kind of further that. I don't know, what is that called in drama? Is it called a plot device? Because I always use that, and I actually took drama, but I mean it was over 20 years ago. So
yeah, I took
remember.
Drama too. Yeah, I don't know, plot device, which but it also had symbolic meaning. So
yeah,
I just figured with everything else they would have freed it, freedom. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
but they, you know, everybody talks about Petra, so like he's fucking trash and filth. So maybe that's why they didn't do it. Nobody really cares about him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Spartacus does, because what he does next kind of shows awesome. That.
Fucking badass, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This was, he just strides away with purpose out onto the, you know, out into the Ludus, and everybody's fighting and everything. And he just goes up to Neus and just pounds into him and just starts beating the fuck out of him. Mm-hmm. But Neus gives it back just as well as he's taking it. He's not some...
Yeah,
punk,
because
you know?
He, in Body Otis's mind, Neus is up there with Crixus and Spartacus, mm-hmm. so he's... got some skill apparently.
Which so was Doctori awesome breaks it up.
Yeah.
You know, and then
he like fucking choke slams him off the cliff, man.
Yeah.
Fucking
he basically
awesome.
Well, at first he was gonna let it probably just kind of let it go mm-hmm. and say, you know,
oh yeah,
you
he's
know,
walking
but then,
away.
But then what does Naya say? Something
he'll
like
he'll be missed, especially his lips upon my cock.
Yeah, and then that was it. He just walks over and just like, you know, in wrestling when they do the choke slam,
man,
he just
perfect.
Lifts this guy up off his feet. This guy has to be 225, 250 at
and
least. And Spartacus lifts
quite
him up.
A bit taller
up.
Than Spartacus,
he
too.
He lifts him up and launches him off the cliff. No chance of survival.
Oh, no.
And I liked how they kind of, they knew that they had your blood up at this scene. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they didn't just let him fall off the cliff and go, ah, like Wile E.
Yeah,
Coyote. No, this was like this was a crunchy, nasty, wet splatter.
It was
although
awesome.
The only thing missing from the scene was all the other fucking shit they throw off.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Exactly. Garbage bags. And
many things have
bottles.
Wigs.
Wigs. Sure, some wigs.
Many things have fallen off the edge of that cliff.
So we have this great, very small transition scene where soldiers march to Body Otis's, you know, office to report about Spartacus and subordinates. And there's no speaking or anything. The soldiers go marching in,
knows.
And then you just see him just stand up all, you know.
And Spartacus is already in chains at this point.
Oh, yeah, when they go to
well,
the
then
scene,
he is after
yeah.
that. This is just where the news is being brought to him.
Oh, that's right.
Body
yeah,
Otis.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the principal, like, that son of a bitch is in trouble again.
So he's pissed. Yeah, Spartacus is in chains now, and Body Otis saying that it's just that. Just this morning, I was boasting about the top ready Arius, which is the style of fighting mm-hmm. that Neus did with the net and trident. And now you kill him, basically. And Spartacus argues that he was defending Petros. Body Otis says Petros was worthless. Neus had worth. Spartacus says Neus did not deserve to live, and this is where Body Otis strikes Spartacus. Says he's done with his generosity, and that Spartacus will fight as a good Roman or die a Thracian.
This scene was cool because, you know, not to flog a dead horse, there's already been several examples of this kind of thing going on between not just the two of them, but other characters as well. It's how you view human life, you know, because Spartacus says he was a man, you know, he was deserving of mm-hmm. better treatment, you know, and basically Body Otis says, no, he was just a piece of shit under heel,
upbringing.
You know, but this guy knew how to fight. Neus mm-hmm. knew how to fight. And, you know, I spent countless hours training him, or at least having Doctori train him, mm-hmm. and I paid money for him, and he was going to make me money. And that's when he tells him, too. He says, you're paying for him out of your earnings. You know, until I get everything that I put into him, you don't get anything.
Which is what's keeping Spartacus from getting just beat. You know, he wanted to take a whip to him, beat the shit out of him with his hands. Mm-hmm. You can tell he held back because he needs him to fight.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like if your car starts malfunctioning on you, you don't take a bat to it because you
Oh,
still
look,
got to
I've
get to
wanted
work.
to.
You want to, but you got to get to work the
I've kicked
next
a few
day.
cars.
Yeah.
And we have a scene where Navia is mourning over Petra's corpse. Crixus says he was too weak for this place. And Navia says that not all of us can be strong. And this is that little, you know, exchange between them two is actually very important as far as their relationship is concerned. And we'll see more of that later. I liked seeing that, you know, because we talked about how the characters are very, you know, true to what they,
right,
it's a very
right.
steady thing. And that was really cool to see that exchange after all that we've seen.
Plus, we kind of glazed over it earlier, was Crixus is laying there. And he says, nobody's come to see me. You know, it shows he cares kind of what his brothers and the Ludus think, because really nobody cares, but she's there taking care of him. So I think he's really falling more and more.
Well, I'm trying to,
in
like,
love.
That's a good point, because there's that conversation that happens between Spartacus right after this, you know, regarding
We could just
Gnaeus.
Go into that now,
yeah.
And
yeah.
that way, and then just comment on it, because it's applicable.
Yeah, right? And because he says it's going against the Brotherhood, and he shames him. His actions that he took against Gnaeus shames Crixus for fighting alongside him when they fought against Theocles together.
Yeah.
And he says, I should have killed you right then. And Spartacus says, I wish you had.
But, you know, Crixus takes this Brotherhood thing really seriously.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, he's saying, I should have just killed you because you don't have a regard for other brothers, you know, because you disrespect it. I should have just killed you in the arena. But I didn't, you know, and, you know, Spartacus is like, well, you know, I wish you had. But at the same time, it shows you that a brother's life is worth taking if Crixus feels like it's okay. Mm-hmm. But when, you know, Spartacus sees what Gnaeus was doing and takes matters into his own hands and tosses him off the cliff, it doesn't sit well with Crixus, but it's perfectly good with Spartacus. So, you know, it's just differing viewpoints. They don't argue the point any further. He just says, I should have killed you. And he's like, yeah, I wish you would have. You know, and then that's it.
Well, it makes me wonder about, like, the whole picture of the story, because you, with Spartacus killing Gnaeus, that's kind of a mini version of what he's supposed to become. It's a mini, like, he's freeing an oppressed person from somebody who's,
yeah.
And, but apparently he's not on his path yet. And is it because, like, he needs to have this brotherhood and, you know, find out who a real enemy is, you know, and actually fight the real enemy and not the Brotherhood? Even though, to me, Gnaeus deserved to fucking die. But it's almost like Crixus is important to Spartacus, like, to teach him, you know, you need to have this Brotherhood
to survive.
But I don't know how else. I'm still trying to form that thought.
I see
I don't
what
know
you're
where...
saying. He's trying to, like, Crixus's comments in that direction are kind of like laying down the groundwork for Spartacus to understand that he's not going to be able to reach his goals by himself. You know, whatever they may be, he's going to have the support of other people behind him. He can't just come up with these crazy harebrained schemes.
Being the good soldier. Soldier takes his brothers over everything else because they're the ones keeping him alive. They're the ones in the pits together. You know, they go through a lot of the same things. So the Brotherhood is really what you have. What else do they have?
Crixus is like that old
family.
Vietnam vet. You
exactly.
know what I mean?
Who's your
gonna,
family, motherfucker.
Yeah, he's going to wear that
kill one of
POW MIA shirt
Absolutely.
Every day of his life, and he's going to
I think it just
keep
shows
in touch.
The way his character is. You know, it's just going to show you that he's really embraced who he is, his station in life, and if he's been there for a really long time, he realizes this is my family.
And it's
you're fucking with it.
It shows that if you can get Crixus as an ally, that's an
Absolutely.
Ally you want to have.
Absolutely.
Undying loyalty there. Mm-hmm.
But I also see it as and we don't have to extrapolate on this too much, but I also see it as a character flaw, because someone like Gnaeus was deserving of death because what he was doing was utterly reprehensible.
Well, it didn't
shouldn't
seem like
have
he
been
had
tolerated.
All the facts, though. You know, they didn't say he was beating him. He was, you know, they just say that, you know, it's because of him that he's dead. So he doesn't really know the whole facts of that he's been torturing this guy and raping him. And
he didn't
he
seem interested to find out either, though.
Yeah, he didn't. Not. He didn't
he's,
know.
He's
but...
half dead, really, himself, laying on the bed.
Yeah.
And it's Spartacus, who he hates anyway, or dislikes at this point. I don't want to say hey, but he kind of dislikes him anyway. So, of course, he's going to obviously go to his brother, who is a part of his family, and just cast the blame into Spartacus's court.
I don't know if he dislikes Spartacus, because
no,
I think
he does.
He dislikes Asher. So he doesn't even try to talk to Asher in the way that he talks to Spartacus. He doesn't try to talk to him about brotherhood.
So maybe it's like the little brother that keeps causing problems. Like, you're such a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And now you're taking my position as the champion.
And it's, you're not shitting all over it.
Yeah, you don't treat it respectfully, and you're the one getting all the goods from it now, and you don't even fucking deserve it. So more of a, was it green-eyed monster? A little, maybe he's a little bit of jealousy mixed in with a little bit of dislike, because he doesn't. Spartacus has moved up quick, the wrong way.
He it doesn't just seem problems. Like jealousy to me, though.
Oh, I see a little bit. Because even when he wakes up and he's like, fuck, Spartacus is champion and my best friend is dead. The world has gone completely to shit.
I just think he has a rigid idea of how things should go. But
No, see, I see a little bit of jealousy. Because he...
Early on, there was, from what I could see.
See, I think it more developed after, but, you know, it's different opinions.
Yeah. I mean,
So what happens next?
Okay. Right. Okay, so now Navia is tending the pigeons.
Mm.
Doctoy enters and questions her about Barca. And she evades his questions as best as she can. Then Doctoy asks about Asher. And Doctoy says the fear in her eyes betray the lie on her tongue.
Mm-hmm.
She tells him his questions put her in harm's way. He backs off, but he is more than just suspicious now. I was glad she was honest, at least in that regard. Like, look.
It's the only thing she could have said, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. She can't put herself into danger.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Because I like Navia, and I don't want,
absolutely,
you know, there to be any distrust on anybody else's part towards her. So mm-hmm. I was glad that she said that.
I'm glad that he didn't press her either.
Yeah.
He respected the fact,
yeah,
you know.
She's just always in just the... She's in a very delicate position always because of mm-hmm. what's going on. So you really don't want to see anything terrible happen to her.
That's
yet.
True. He backs off, but he is more than just suspicious now.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have like the locker room scene, or what would be the locker room. Asher is removing his leg brace and longing for its permanent removal. Varro says perhaps he could fashion a proper cock from it.
Shows even the new guys are sick of his shit already.
Well, shit, like, Varro's had to, you know, use Asher for things, so that's where I started forming the thought. You know, Asher just goes and finds out all these people's weaknesses.
Makes money.
He finds out Varro already, and has already pressed him on it in some, you know, manner, and Varro doesn't like him as a result. Doctoy enters and tells everyone to leave except Asher. He questions Asher about Barca. Doctoy discovers through this questioning that Asher was there as a witness and discovers conflict in what Asher and Navia has said to him.
Which scares me that Navia is going to be in trouble because now Asher knows that she could be a loose end.
Mm-hmm. So Doctoy is treading eel-infested waters here. Mm-hmm. Eels that have not been fucked by Lucretia. Spartacus is remembering Sura at this next scene. There's more Sura prophecy. And this is this takes place at the very first episode when their village is burned.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, close your eyes and place yourself in their hands. And she's referring to the gods.
It's just me. While they're laying there, I just think, get up and run. What are you fucking
or
just
why aren't
lounging
you crying?
For?
Yeah.
Get the hump on and then run. Just run. Maybe it was all Spartacus' fault. Should have ran.
So Bodiatus comes for Spartacus and asks if a decision has been made. Spartacus hands over his dagger and gives himself over as well. Bodiatus doesn't like, you know, what this means or what's the meaning behind this dagger. And,
oh, man.
And Spartacus even says, well, if you knew the meaning behind it, you would be more amenable to the... to this gift, and which it's, since I said earlier, it's a symbol of freedom. He's handing over his freedom, giving himself over. It's also a Thracian dagger, which now is the property of Numerius, as Bodiatus says. But
Well, and it shows too how much his worth is, because even Doctori said it earlier, if they knew that you were trying to escape, you'd be crucified. And then he hands over pretty much evidence of taking the knife from that, from that
the
senator.
Little kid.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was a senator's child, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
the
it's
magistrate,
kind of like,
yeah.
Okay, well, what
or
the
magistrate.
Fuck? And you see him kind of like, you know, it just shows his worth. Anybody else, probably, they would have gone down to it, and they definitely would have crucified him. Killed by strangulation.
But there's a condition, and Spartacus wants to test his fate. He wants to fight these six men by himself. And Bodiatus says, fine, but I have a condition of my own while you're fingering my asshole.
That was funny.
You kiss cheek while fingering asshole.
He's got some good comebacks. I'll
yeah,
give him
he's,
that. He's clever.
He's got good lines.
Got a little sailor in him.
Bodiatus wants Spartacus to embrace himself as the champion of Capua.
And embrace the Spartacus identity as well, mm-hmm. whatever that might be.
Puts his, what did he say something about the gods too? That, you know, he's giving himself over to the religion.
Mm-hmm.
Zealot.
Which the Thracians
yeah, he
were...
says he never had much use for, mm-mm. you know, the religion, but he decided that he's going to give himself over to his, mm-hmm. you know, what his wife believed in.
And Thracians' prime god was Dionysus, by the way.
Hmm. Wine?
Yes, god of wine. And
That explains why they might have just gotten had sex.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
were just
maybe.
They were going to church.
Yeah. Fucking like Bacchae.
Church, here's the steeple.
The match. Now we have the match. And Alethea's reaction to Spartacus is funny. I didn't write a whole lot here.
Well, my favorite about the arena are the rednecks in the crowd. I always
yeah.
see two or three, like, woo, come on, NASCAR-style rednecks pulling off their shirt, shaking. One guy was having sex in
yeah.
the arena.
Yeah.
It cracks me absolutely up. It's I look for it, and I'm like, oh, fine. You know, where's Waldo in the crowd? It was awesome.
So this is supposed to be the match where Spartacus is being this Roman general, mm-hmm. I guess.
My favorite match so far, I think. It really is. I think even more than the last one, I think this is my favorite arena fight. Just for all the, you know, it's like when Luke Skywalker, I hate to use Star Wars again, comes through and fights Vader for the second time. You can tell he just kind of switched over to what he's supposed to be, what you wanted him to be, an empire.
Mm-hmm.
And now you see Spartacus go through this fight, and at the beginning you're worried about him. And then all of a sudden something clicks, and he mans up. And I mean, he fucks
when he
everybody
starts
up.
Running towards them with the two swords. That was pretty cool.
And he gets hit with a maul, which is like a giant hammer. And back then, that's the worst. The hammers, in my opinion, because I love anything that has to do with that kind of fighting. And I brought this up in kitchens and other places, getting people's opinions. What would you rather die by, a mace, a hammer, or a sword? And most
sword?
People,
sword.
Yes, most people, a lot of people go hammer because they don't think that you're going to, well, you know, they don't pay any attention, but they think, okay, well, I'm not going to bleed out, but all
the
internal injuries,
of soft tissue damage
yeah,
there.
Your bones break, they would be the absolute mm-hmm. worst. And for a hammer that size, I mean, it's mm-hmm. fucking no joke. That'll crush a whole lung.
But we're forgetting the very beginning of this fight. He just stands there
oh, awesome.
With his arms spread out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other, quote unquote, you know, air
almost
quote,
Christ-like.
Thracian. Yeah, he throws. Yeah, it is. It almost mm-hmm. Christ-like. And he throws that spear and it just grazes his cheek. And then he knows that the
it's
gods
like
are
his,
on his
exactly
side.
Exactly. He's like, all right, I'll test it and see.
The look on Bodiatus' face when that's going on, he's just like, you see him gripping his hand and opening.
Bitch.
You know.
Yeah, he got stressed a couple
what if
times.
What did hit him?
Yeah,
I'm dead. Son of a
worst match in history ever.
Yeah,
him and Xena would have just gotten up and ran. See ya.
We go back.
Thanks
to
for
the,
your money.
Go back to the Ludus. So, Crixus, how you feeling, buddy?
Yeah. Oh yeah, but you know. I love the entire fight scene. I really do. And then towards the end when he sees his own face, which is a lot like Star Wars and Darth Vader, and Empire Strikes Back, there was that turning point. You know, it was awesome. The whole fight was just fucking awesome. And yeah. then he finally gives in and they do that badass flashback of his whole life.
That was his life flashing before his eyes.
Exactly.
Before he killed himself. Exactly.
Fan-fucking-tastic. Mm-hmm. Loved it. Loved it. Now I look forward to the arena constantly.
Yeah. And he says, I am Spartacus. The iconic line.
Mm-hmm. With all the dead bodies around him. Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Now his the hero's journey arc has come to a certain point.
For sure.
Yeah, when he has to kill himself in order to become the hero.
Body Odyssey even says, they're like, oh, he's like fighting like a man possessed. And he, I think, he realizes too, like, shit.
Like, even possessed by the gods. He damn sure
might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fucking great.
So one of the good, I mean, besides the fighting in this scene, one of the good scene or things about it was Alethea's face.
Yeah. Oh, she wants him to die. Every time she's, like, waiting. Yeah.
It's like she doesn't seem to care that much for her husband, but she's pissed off at Spartacus, because of what her husband has to go through, and then by extension, her.
Even at the beginning of the season, when we first see her, she's like, you know, you need to do these things because you're not favored by the people.
Yeah.
You look like a chode. And then Spartacus knocks him off his horse, kills his whole group that's with him. So they both, I mean, it's not that I think he shamed her husband, but that he shamed her and all the hard work she's done to put her husband in that position. Because really, he's in that position because of her.
Yeah.
It's her father that, you know, put him, probably promoted him. I don't know if he did or not. But
it's the classic, my father-in-law got me a job.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So she feels shamed, you know, I don't think for her husband. I think for her.
Yeah.
You know, she's a spoiled brat.
So at the end of it, he just proclaims, I am Spartacus.
Oh, awesome.
Gave me chills.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Body Odyssey is happy because he's done everything that he said he was going to do. He fought the six people. Mm-hmm. He killed them all. And he's, you know, proclaimed himself to be Spartacus. He's taken on the identity. So.
And he finally, I think, entertained the crowd. He finally was a bit of a showman.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the whole standing there with his arms open might have been more for him, but to the crowd.
Oh, that's pure gold. Yeah.
Holy
them.
Shit. Yeah. You know? And then even the end, you know, it's him accepting, but it's not just Spartacus standing there like, I fucking killed him. You know, we're good. I think he's becoming the showman and maybe the gladiator too. We'll see how Crixus handles him next episode. Can't fucking wait.
So, this, like I said at the beginning, this has become one of my top favorite episodes.
Oh, absolutely.
And I had wrote that I commend the storytelling for offering up an exquisite version of this particular tale. Because even in history, there's the stories that were written about Spartacus didn't really come out until like 100 or 200 years after. So there's probably some exaggerations and things like that. But it's still a great legend. And no wonder we're all fascinated with him. And
well, the writers have done an amazing job so far.
But it does not have to match the literature that came before necessarily. Because, you know, I talked about how Sura was with him with the Ludus, and I think the way they handle that later is really cool. Anyway, but as long as it hits the right points and makes the journey compelling, the creators have my respect. Mm-hmm. And these creators hit it every single time.
The director, everybody works. I mean, they've done casting. They've really done a great job. And like you said, they do hit all the points that they should to where it's not just outrageous, you know.
I don't know if you've seen the show Camelot. Or actually, it was Arthur. It was just called Arthur, I think.
Merlin?
Is it Camelot?
I have no idea.
It's not Merlin. I think it's Camelot. It's the one with Vesper. Vesper from, what's her name? Eva Green. She plays Morgan Le Fay.
And did they do her right?
She plays Morgan Le Fay, really. I liked her as Morgan Le Fay.
Did they do her story right?
They only did one season.
Mm-hmm.
And, which I think I, in my opinion, they didn't succeed because of who they casted as Arthur. But there's some really great moments, but there's one awesome episode. And I brought this up because it's another way where they're taking, you know, a legend, but they're retelling it in another way.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell the story of the Lady in the Lake in one particular episode, and it is badass. Like, if you don't watch the rest of the
Watch
season,
that one episode.
watch that episode
Okay.
only. You will. It's
I'm a big
great.
Arthur fan, so I'll have to
Yeah,
check
I
it out.
know we've talked about that before. And it, I wrote it was a tremendous episode. But the reason why I bring that up is that, and I've already said this basically, is that Spartacus has achieved that level of storytelling in every episode, in my opinion. And it begins to culminate now with this episode, and it's going to surpass its own set standard from here on out.
Awesome.
So, and I cannot praise the creators enough. I love this show immensely.
I'm hooked.
Yay!
I've been turned.
What's the next episode?
Fuck.
It's not the Mark of the Brotherhood,
I
is
think it
it?
is the Mark of the Brotherhood.
Mark of the Brother, yeah,
Yeah.
okay, episode 8, Mark of the Brotherhood. Next time.
Next time
Next
on
time,
Spartacus.
Gadget. Next time.
Poor cat. Always choking his cat.
All right, good night, good
See y'all
day.
next time.
This was a No Ship Network podcast brought to you by Esoteric Studios and Axolotl Tank Productions.